Hey guys, welcome back to Real Time Crime.
I'm Hannah.
And I'm Javai. And welcome back to our third episode for the month of May, where we are focusing on cold cases. And the story we have for today is on Dorothy Jane Scott, based in Orange County in California. So take it away, Hannah.
So like Jedi said, today's case revolves around Dorothy Jane Scott, who was reported missing in Orange County, California in May of 1980. So she was born April 23rd, 1948. She was living in Stanton, California, which was just outside like Anaheim. She was 32 years old, a single mom. She had a four-year-old son at the time of her disappearance, and his name was Shanti, but later in life, he now goes by Sean. And they were living with Dorothy's aunt. Her parents did live nearby, like not too far away in Anaheim, but the father of her son, Sean, or Shanti, he lived out of state. And just before the disappearance, he had recently been for a visit with the son. So she was a secretary for two stores that were jointly owned in Anaheim. The first one was called the Swinger Psych Shop, and the other was called Custom John's Head Shop. So they were just like kind of like hippie psychedelic type stores, and like a smoke shop kind of situation. So her coworkers and friends described her to be a devout Christian. She preferred staying at home, and she wasn't known to do drugs or drink or anything like that. Like I said, her parents lived in Anaheim. They were Jacob and Vera, and they would help out to babysit with her son and stuff while she worked because they were near the stores. And her father said she might have dated on occasion, but as far as the family knew, there was no steady boyfriend. Months before her abduction, she had started to get weird phone calls while she was at work from an unknown man. And she said that the voice sounded familiar, but she could just never place it. So this man would profess his love to her, tell her that he was watching her, and he would call her almost daily. And her mother said one time, so he would also call her at home. Mostly he would call her at home, especially towards the end. And so her mother had said one time when he called, he told her to go outside and look at her car because he had something for her. And on her windshield was one dead rose. She also,
How are you going to try to like make someone fall in love with you and then give them a dead rose? Like at least make it a pretty one.
Come on, give me a bouquet.
But also really creepy.
Very creepy. So. Yeah, so she was obviously on edge from these phone calls, and she was actually considering buying a gun. One source had said she decided not to because her son was so young at the time that, you know, he could hurt himself or something. And apparently about a week before she disappeared, she started taking self-defense classes. So the disappearance occurred on the evening of May 28th, 1980. So around 9 p.m., she was with coworkers at an employee meeting. She had dropped her son off with her parents so they could watch him during the meeting. And while they were there, she noticed one of her coworkers, his arm looked really bad. It was like a red mark, and it just kind of looked like it was infected and stuff. This guy's name was Conrad. So Dorothy and another coworker, Pam, decided to take him to the ER, and Dorothy offered to drive. So on the way, they stopped by Dorothy's parents' house to say, hey, this is what's going on. I'm going to be late to pick up my son. And she also changed the scarf she was wearing. It was a black scarf, and she changed it to a warmer one that was red. So it turned out that Conrad had gotten bit by a black widow spider. So it was very good that they got him to the hospital. He was treated, and by about 11 p.m., he was doing well enough that they discharged him with a prescription. Dorothy went to the restroom very quickly and then went to go get her car from the parking lot so that Conrad didn't have to walk too far. Because while he was okay to be discharged, he still, you know, wasn't feeling great. So Pam stayed with him, And they went to the pharmacy in the hospital to go fill up the prescription and then went by the exit to wait for Dorothy to pull up. And they're waiting around for a while, and she's still not showing up. So they decide to start going towards the parking lot to see, I don't know, maybe the car is broken down, what's going on, you know? So as they start making their way to the parking lot, they notice Dorothy's car, like, speeding towards them. And not only does it, like, speed towards them, it speeds past them. And the headlights were so bright and blinding that they couldn't see who was behind the wheel. They assumed it was Dorothy, but now we think, who knows? And the car, yeah, like, it just drove right out of the parking lot, took a sharp right, and that was it. So they obviously, they, like, tried to wave their arms to get her attention, but it just kept going. So they waited around for a little while and eventually, you know, figured their way home. And they didn't hear from her for a few hours. So they decided immediately to report it to the police, which was great. So by about 4:30 p.m. the next morning, so the 29th, her car was found abandoned in an alleyway about 10 miles away from the hospital, and it was on fire. She drove a white 1973 Toyota station wagon.
So, like, they're stranded at the hospital, number one, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they don't know, like, who was driving the car. Could have been her, could have not been her.
Mm-hmm.
And now the car is on fire. And they haven't heard from her?
No, they figured, you know, maybe something happened with her son and somehow she got word, so she took off. You know, anything could have happened, but it was so weird. And then the car's on fire. Clearly something is going on.
But she wasn't in the car, right? Like, she wasn't...
Nope, car was empty. Okay. There was no Dorothy. There was no trace of anyone else being with her. I mean, the car was on fire, so there really wasn't anything left to investigate, I suppose, but...
It's just so odd.
Very. And only 10 miles away from the hospital. So about a week after her disappearance, her parents received phone calls from an unidentified man, and it's the same man. And he would say things like, "I've got her," and then hung up, or "I killed her," and then hung up. And he never stayed on the phone very long. It was just enough to rattle the mother and then be done. In April of 1984, the man had randomly called in the evening rather than during the afternoons like he had been. And so the father, Jacob, he picked up and the calls stopped after that. They stopped until August of 1984. So a few months after the phone call stopped, but 4 years after the disappearance. Remains were found near Santa Ana Canyon Road in Anaheim by a construction worker, and he found dog bones and human bones, like, side by side, and the bones were charred. So it was believed that the remains had been there for about 2 years or more, because there was a bushfire that ripped through the area in 1982. They also found a turquoise ring and a watch nearby the remains that were determined later on to be hers. Dorothy's mom said that the watch had stopped at 12:30 a.m. on May 29th, so, like, a few hours, what, like, an hour and a half after she went missing or so, and about 3.5 hours before the car was found, or maybe, yeah, like 3.5-4 hours before the car was found. So later that month, the remains were identified as Dorothy Jane Scott. They found a couple bones, and they found, like, a complete skull intact with all the teeth. So they were able to use her teeth to identify her. An autopsy was conducted, but there was no cause of death that was able to be determined because the bones were charred. After the remains were found, the calls started up again. The police installed a voice recorder on the Scott's phone, but they were never able to trace the calls because the man never stayed on the line long enough. It was just long enough to rattle the parents, to freak them out, and then go. So we've got one possible theory that could be this man. So in June of 1980, an unidentified man called the front desk at the Orange County Registrar that day. And this was, like, a local paper. So that morning, the paper had run an article about the case not giving too many details, just talking about it, because it was just recently after the disappearance. So the man talks to this person at the front desk and he says, "I killed her. I killed Dorothy Scott. She was my love. I caught her cheating with another man. She denied having someone else. I killed her." So this person also, the person at the newspaper also said that the man knew details about the case that hadn't been released yet. He knew that the friend Conrad had been bitten by a spider that night, and he knew that she had changed to a red scarf. So he was following them.
Never mind.
You sure?
Okay.
He also claimed that Dorothy called him while they were at the hospital that night, but Pam, the woman who went along with them, disputed this claim. She says that no, Dorothy was with her, like literally next to her the entire time, except for when she went to use the bathroom real quick and then left the building. So based on the fact that this unidentified caller knew these details that hadn't been released, they do believe that this was the killer. And that's all we've got. There's nothing. I mean, it's 1980, so there wasn't, yeah, the topic of stalking wasn't really talked about and believed in the ways that we know it now. And it wasn't understood. The dangers and the damage that can be caused by stalking wasn't understood as well at the time either. So even though she did try to get the police involved as she was getting these calls, there wasn't much being done. We know that her stalker wasn't known to be an ex-boyfriend or someone that she would have had a relationship with. Like I said, she recognized the voice, but she just couldn't place it. So it could have just been some random person she met. Maybe he was like, I don't know, maybe he would run into her in the coffee shop and talk to her. We don't know, but we know that he was watching her from a distance, harassed her, noted her movement, her clothing, and did all of this without raising suspicion or being spotted.
I feel like even a random person that just saw her and like fell in love with her could have been the stalker.
Yeah.
Nowadays, you don't have to like personally know someone to per se like stalk them or follow them. And also the topic of like stalking nowadays, I think like you mentioned, it's a little bit more common. But I've heard from other cases, it's very hard to like even get a criminal case against someone because stalking, like, I don't know. I think it's just hard overall to get a case.
Because if they're not like actively doing something to you, right?
Right.
That's the problem.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, remember the Cassandra Ayon case that we did earlier this year? So her killer was her stalker. And I mean, aside from a restraining order, there's nothing you can do, right? Like sometimes police don't take you seriously. So
yeah,
stalking is so scary and so serious, way more than what people like actually think it is.
As we can see, it can result in death, and we don't know what happened to her. Did he have her for a long time? Did he kill her immediately? We don't know.
You know what happened to her kid? How old was he? Did you mention that?
He was 4 at the time of the disappearance, 8 when the remains were found. And it's said to this day he's still trying to find his mother's killer.
Poor baby.
Yeah.
That must be traumatic.
Terribly, yeah. Yeah, he's got to be late 30s, early 40s, something like that right now. So yeah, there's not much to say about this case. She just disappeared and we don't know what happened after that. One thing I would like to let you know is that I'm going to list below resources. If you or anyone that you know is or has been a victim of stalking, I will link down below the Stalking Prevention Awareness and Resource Center. I will also link below, just by chance, if anyone knows anything about her disappearance, you can submit a tip anonymously to Orange County Crime Stoppers website. And like I said, we will list those down below as always. And as always, it's really important to just try and share this episode and get the information out there. And hopefully one day the family can finally have some closure. Her parents passed away without ever knowing truly what happened to her. And that just doesn't sit right with me. So that's all we have for today's case. We will see you next week as we wrap up our category for May.
As always, if you haven't already, don't forget to follow us on social media at Instagram and Facebook at Real Time Crime.